my job as it's defined today and my job in like 3-5 years from now, they'll be dramatically different, right? So I think that's the other thing, like what we do today will be very different from what we will do in the future. So I think workflows of the future, I think is very important.
You're tuned in to the Data Masters podcast. In each episode, we dissect the complexities of data management and discuss the data strategies that fuel innovation, growth, and efficiency. We speak with industry leaders who share how their modern approaches to data management help their organizations succeed. Let's dive straight into today's episode with Anthony Dayton.
Welcome to Data Masters. Today, we're asking a big question. Beyond the hype, what does it really mean to be an AI-driven company? And how do you do it when you're a 100-year-old institution responsible for the retirement security of millions? Our guest has the real-world answers. Sastri Dhirvasala is the Chief Operating Information and Digital Officer for TIAA, where he leads the charge on technology and operations. He's a true innovator with deep experience in making transformation happen at massive scale. In our conversation today, Sastri is going to ground us in what it really matters, what he calls the data context of AI. We'll explore the double-edged sword of having a century of data, how it's an incredible asset, but also a hidden liability if not managed perfectly. And we'll talk about the hard, messy problems, like making sense of 40 years of contracts for a single customer. More importantly, we're going to talk about how this technology connects with our humanity. We'll discuss the profound responsibility of using data to protect vulnerable clients and explore a fascinating concept Sastri is pioneering called the empathy agent, a way to use AI to make customer interactions more human, not less. It's a discussion I guarantee will change the way you think about enterprise AI. Sastri, thanks so much for joining us.
Pleasure to be here, Anthony.
So, Sastri, in our planning call, as we were thinking about this podcast, you framed the conversation about AI around this really, I thought, really useful phrase, the data context of AI. And maybe we can start there and have you explain what you mean by that. TIAA is obviously a 100-year-old organization, rich in deep, rich data. And so I really can't think of anywhere better to think about data context and AI. But maybe if you start us on what you think the phrase means and how you think it's more important than the model itself.
Yeah, I mean, data, obviously, you know, as a 100-year-old company that was formed in 1918, we have a lot of data and we have many businesses. You know, we have three primary businesses: retirement, wealth and advice, and asset management. And our asset management business is a global business. Retirement is more US-centric. We have global operations. So you think about the breadth of the data that we have and the depth of the data we have, coupled with the regulatory demands we have, the privacy demands we have, the global regulations that we have to comply with. It's a pretty complex data ecosystem. And then the underlying technologies for this data has also generations of technology, all the way from the original mainframes that were hosting this data to like the most contemporary data in motion on real-time nodes with edge computing and everything in between. So to me, you know, the old saying that we are all familiar with, which is garbage in, garbage out, holds true. But in the context of AI, it's almost like garbage in, hallucinations out. Yeah. Garbage in, bad actions out. Garbage in, scalable damage out. So the data quality problem and the context of data in terms of AI, I think is probably 10x more important than any other problem we had before. Because if we don't manage the data properly, and if we don't have a good data ecosystem, at least when you have humans in the loop in some of these systems, us humans could at least smell out bad data if you see it in that report or something like that. But if you just ask the agentic AI system to handle that and you trust the keys with it, the damage could be pretty bad. So I think that's on the, I guess, the cautious side of the equation. But then on the positive side of the equation, what better way to put good quality of data to use at scale, right? Like if we were making decisions based on samples of data as humans or systems were training their, you know, previous generations of machine learning models, et cetera, on limited compute and limited data because of various constraints. And now you can actually apply it to the entire corpus of data that we have in a company and coupled with external data sources and solve interesting problems at scale for our customers and businesses. I think that's far more impactful. So I feel like, you know, in the data context of AI, we're going to really test the boundaries on both sides, which is great.
Yeah, and I think another thing that people don't often think about is that a lot of these models were trained on data from the internet. And so they know lots of very general things, but they don't know the specific things. They don't know your customer, your contracts, your relationship with that customer. And I think the opportunity to bring that context into these models is probably the number one theme I hear today. This repeated theme of like, how do I get context into these powerful models?
100%. I think because, you know, I mean, we know this is a big debate going on right now in the industry where there's a lot of questions on what data have these models been trained on and are we going to rewrite the history of the data corpus? I mean, there's a lot of interesting debates that are happening. But at the end of the day, when models get to be available at scale, like what we're seeing now and what we will see, and they get more commoditized for enterprises to use, then how you use it and what you train it on to customize for your own business is where the real impact will come. And that's where the data context is far more important because then you're really training it for your specific customers and business needs, right? And that's like the context is very important.
No, totally agreed. And now sort of following on that for a second, you are also responsible for operations at TIA. So you're not just wearing a data hat, but you're actually making these tools available. You're making it happen with users. And so I think of this as like not just theoretical AI, but like real AI that needs to transform the way people work. Before we dig into the details of exactly what the use case is, from a ground rules perspective, sort of table stakes, what do you think you need to have in place as an organization before you even start thinking about deploying AI at scale? Clearly good data, that's a good start.
Yeah, you know, I've got four legs of the stool, as I call it, in my organization. And in my role, I have global technology, which obviously is one of the pillars for AI to begin with, right? Because the tech stack and where you're hosting these models and how you're computing them and how you're integrating with the rest of the ecosystem, that's one pillar. Second is our client experience. So the digital capabilities we have, how do we define the end-to-end client experience, be it institutional clients that we serve or individual clients. So essentially B2B, B2C, D2B2C. Then I've got global operations across all three businesses. So how we actually operationalize some of these capabilities and how they're touching our end customer. And then lastly, the shared services organization, that's the fourth leg of the stool where that's basically the middle office, the back office, a lot of analytics functions that support our global business services and capabilities around the globe that will be AI powered. So if you now think about the four legs and you apply AI as you think about solving business growth challenges or creating delightful client experiences or driving new AI-powered business models or scaling operational impact and customer impact with the power of AI or changing our own corporate functions with the power of AI, be it people, legal, HR, I mean, risk and compliance or internal audit, et cetera. It comes to this central organization that I have the privilege of leading. So AI for this organization is not theory. Right. So it has to really, whatever we build in AI, we're the ones who are going to be, frankly, bearing the brunt of it. We didn't do a good job because we're the ones using it on the calls as we receive from our customers or with institutional partners that we interface with. So It's actually a unique role in that sense, Anthony, and I really like it because we get to cook it and we get to eat it ourselves and make sure that it's the right food. So with that in mind, if I think about the types of use cases that we're trying to solve with the power of AI, we have basically focused in on all like three aspects. One is powering the business growth. How do we power business growth with AI, and how do we enable the next generation of impact for our retirement, asset management, and wealth management businesses? Two is fueling innovation, like what kind of business model changes or shared services changes that we could be driving for the firm. And three is strengthening the core. So obviously there's a lot of opportunity in driving a level of efficiencies that we've not realized with the power of AI. This is like as big as the change to electricity or change to the internet or change to the smartphone, right? It's that big of a change that they're experiencing.
Yeah, I think this goes to a point I've made on the podcast before. In my humble opinion, there are really only three reasons that an organization invests in data and technology. It's either to drive the top line, to save money, or to reduce some asymmetric risk in the business, which I think map very nicely to the points that you made. Just to connect two ideas, TIA has almost certainly an enormous amount of data, not the least of which is that you've been around for a long time, but also really at its core, data is your business. And you made a point before about the people that you work with, that you're leading, are really good at sort of like sniffing at data and saying, this doesn't seem right to me. And so I'm going to maybe double check it, or I'm going to go cross-check with a different resource. And AI just doesn't do that. AI will just run with whatever it's handed. And I'll extend something you said before a little bit. I think the danger with AI is not only that it runs with this stuff, but that it's trained to seem as credible as possible with it. It's trained to, in a way, be good to its user by seeming confident and smart and thoughtful and representing some piece of data as true, even if it's quite literally hallucinated or made up. But share your thoughts on this, because like I'm curious how if you've seen this and how you struggle with it.
Yeah, I mean, AI is definitely as confident as it gets, right? You go to any of the AI agents that we use and the responses, you know, I mean, each AI agent that we use or chat GPT-like options we have, I feel like they all have their own personas. Like Claude could be a little bit more descriptive and emotional, and ChatGPT could be very confident and encouraging. You know, you can like put your own persona tags on these, but they're all very confident in their responses. So, which is good because that's how humans, we derive confidence and we use them. So the adoption is actually driven by a level of confidence that you can get from the AI. But then there is the hallucination. I feel like, yes, we will throw humans at the problem in the beginning, Anthony, and I do think that we're going to have humans in the loop for the foreseeable future to make sure that the AI is just not hallucinating and portraying false confidence, and then we're making bad decisions. But I do think that there will be a point soon where AI agents will be given that responsibility to do that on AI. So there's like a degree of separation. It's almost like how many cops would you employ on the freeways for speed checks versus putting speed cameras to do that? Yeah, I mean, there will be its own issues. But I think that we will have to evolve as the society evolves around these, where there will be layers of AI systems and agents that will be checking on each other and creating a level of ecosystem. Because I don't think humans alone could scalably solve this hallucination issue and problem. So we're going to have to get better at the algos and models, no question about it. We're going to have to get better at the data quality issues, no question about it. But we're going to have to also get better at checking and putting the right checks and balances. And I think that some of that would be done by AI itself at some point too. Yeah. And we are, we have invested through our PA Ventures in a couple of firms that actually do this. So obviously it's early stage, but we are quite encouraged by the optionality that's like emerging right now. And we will just integrate that into our broader ecosystem at TIA.
And I think the point you're making, you used the word scale a couple times there, and I think this is a really important concept. And again, in your role running operations, I'm sure you think a lot about the way typically or historically the way you would scale an operation is bring more people on, just hire more people. And I have to think that that has changed and is changing. And the example you shared previously on our prep call was an agent having to look through 10 different contracts that you might have with a client that span over 40 years. That is an extraordinarily research challenge that a single human being might work on for days, if not a week. And using AI to quickly and scalably solve that problem makes the agent actually more efficient. And it's something that you literally couldn't do unless you hired banks and banks of people. Is that the right way to think about it?
Yeah. And that is a real scale problem solved with AI, right? And you still have the beauty of that use case, Anthony. We have a human in the loop. I mean, frankly, human is in the front line here, right? So think about my client services operations folks that are getting calls from our millions of participants. And for those of you who are listening to this who don't know what TIA does, TIA was founded by Andrew Carnegie in 1918 to build retirement solutions and offer lifetime income solutions for higher education, for healthcare, and nonprofit sector. Now we manage close to $1.4 trillion of assets. And so if you think about the servicing aspect of our client services professionals, you know, a participant in our language, which is basically a customer who has a contract with us, is calling in. Now, this could be a professor from one of the universities that has, let's say, changed jobs four times and has done some research as well for a healthcare segment. And then they came back and now they're retired. Now they're calling with a question. The complexity of the contracts we have with all the institutions and the individual contracts, contractual clauses that are there, it's one person at the end of the day that's calling us. So we have to treat that one person as one person. But the customer service professional has to sift through a lot of contracts and answer that question. So now what happens truly without this level of AI capability is we will say, yep, we will research to our middle office function. We'll get back or we keep the person on hold and then we go through. Now put AI in the mix. You got an AI agent that's going to like go through these contracts, has the ability to come up with recommendations. This is real data. This is not like some artificial data. This is real data. And then it comes with synthesis on these contracts. And you still have the human and you run with it. And then you're able to service the customer. It's a great classic use case of this generative AI technology, if you think about it, and because it is going into reams of data, synthesizing it, creating real actionable insights for a human that is serving a human in more real time, in more personalized, in more customized, in more expeditious way from a servicing point of view. So I feel like that's a great example of the use of AI. And same thing, like we do the same thing on the institutional side in our asset management business, where we have to research. So our portfolio management teams research a lot of companies and a lot of data, right? So we have this research buddy AI agent for our asset management business. Our asset management business is called Novine. So we've deployed it. Same thing when you think about institutional insights that we need to provide or portfolio decisions that we have to make in our investments from an asset management point of view. Same thing, lots of data, lots of documents, lots of unstructured documents that we have to analyze and come up with insights quickly. That level of scale is, I think, what makes it really encouraging to have the level of capabilities that we're being seen with generative AI.
Experience Tamer's proven data-centric AI, engineered to speed the discovery, enrichment, and maintenance of the golden records businesses need to accelerate growth. Tamer's expertise in quickly and accurately unifying large amounts of data across disparate sources gets results faster at a lower cost compared to traditional master data management or DIY solutions. Stop wasting time on bad data. Visit www.tamer.com. That's TAMR.com to see results now.
So in this way, I mean, this is a real connection between your role as an operator and this AI and data context. But again, I think historically, a chief operating officer would think about solving any scaling problem by scaling operations. We can add more people to the research team, or we're going to add more people to the call centers so we can handle these complex queries. And now you've been given this ability to handle these problems using a technology approach and using a different scaling factor. I want to also connect to something you said before. The population that TIAA works most closely with are retirees, people who are, I would imagine that the kinds of calls you're getting are from somebody who has retired and has a question about their retirement plans and their relationship with TIAA Craft. The challenge, of course, is this is an aging population. And you brought up this question in our prep call where many of these people are experiencing some level of cognitive decline. They may be confused about their plan, and you and your agents have a fiduciary responsibility to help guide that person to a good answer. This brings up a whole series of difficult regulatory complexities, ethical complexities. It's a really difficult problem. How are you applying AI to that challenge and problem?
Yeah, I think before I answer the question, you made an important point, which I think I should just double click on for a few seconds, Anthony, which is the role of the operating officer itself. Because if you look at the operating officer role, you have either people in these roles that have grown through operating roles who now have to learn AI, learn technology to a different degree to put use of that into the day-to-day operations, right? Of course, then there are people like me who have actually grown in those, who have taken the scale jobs of running operations. So I think either way you look at it, you're going to have to learn the other side. So for me, frankly, I feel kind of blessed to have grown in this path of technology, data, and AI, now leading large-scale operations, because I could easily conceive some of these ideas more because I've been trained to do that. But of course, we have to learn the operations of how does the retirement services operations work. Like I've worked for financial services all my life, but it's a different segment of financial services. So I think at the end of the day, there's a lot of learning involved, but it's quite an opportunity for leaders who have large scale jobs like mine, who have operational responsibilities in addition to strategic functions. Now, coming to the use case that you mentioned, it's a great use case. It's one that the TIA is uniquely positioned along with maybe others like us. We serve generations of customers, right? Or participants in our language. So we have Gen Zs that are beginning to like start accumulating for their retirement, who may not call us, who are very well-versed with digital medium and they consume insights through social media and they make decisions based on that. And so there is that aspect of it. And they may be using different phrases. I have teenagers at home. And I get all these different phrases, like skibbity, you know, and then if you have kids. So we have to converse with them and influence them to save for their retirement. And that's not the first thing. That's not the 10th thing even that they're thinking about. So there's that side. And then there is the middle of tenure participants who have been accumulating and who are now making decisions based on where they are with their tenure and career and life, et cetera. And then you have retired folks who now are decumulating, who are getting their lifetime income paychecks from TIA, who may not want to be on these digital channels, who may not want to go to their device, who may want to just talk to somebody. So if that's the spectrum and you're serving those customers, each generation and each participant brings a different set of parameters on how we serve these customers. And, you know, you could say, well, isn't that true for any business? Because every business has these type of parameters. But decisions on what to buy in retail or decisions on how to use your payment product are dramatically different from decisions when it comes to your own future nest of retirement money. The only thing that in my mind comes close to this is health. And health and wealth are like most critical things from a decisioning point of view. So when you now get into the phase of like where we serve participants who are retired, and we have America definitely has longevity increasing, which is a good problem to have. It's a great thing to have. But with that, we have more older adults who are more prone to cognitive decline, who are more vulnerable for fraud, financial fraud, who are less savvy with some of these cyber protection techniques. That's the population now we need to help, right? So we've helped them all along to save for the retirement, but now how do you protect their financial well-being? That we've now been working on, I mean, for that set of problems, right? Because if you think about cognitive decline, can you put AI into work to help our participant to prompt or to help the customer service professional in handling these conversations in a more impactful way, or to engage their trusted contact? Because older adults, especially with cognitive decline, may have trusted contacts. So how do you engage them? How do you put AI in the middle of this to protect them from fraud actors, somebody who's like impersonating as a government agent? Like, I'm from IRS and I'm calling you, sir. And then how do you respond to it? Or romance scams that are on the rise because of senior, like older adults with loneliness, and there's all kinds of issues there with financial fraud. So I believe that this is an area where TIA can make a huge impact. In fact, we just published some extensive research on this. We've done through our TIA Institute a lot of research on cognitive decline and financial protection and financial fraud prevention. So I'm personally passionate about it, which is why I'm talking at length on this use case, because I feel like AI will significantly help. Of course, we have to use it carefully. We have to use it with all the privacy rules and regulations. We have to make sure that it's governed. We have to make sure that it's checked and everything. But I think it's a good use of AI in terms of financial stability of older adults.
And you mentioned, there's actually a fun podcast that I sometimes will listen to called Money, Death, Money, and Taxes. I want to say something close to that. And the idea behind the podcast is these are taboo topics, like no one wants to talk about.
Yeah.
And it feels like your agents are having conversations about death, taxes, and money. Those are really the only conversations they're having. It's on one of those three categories. So these must be extraordinarily difficult conversations. Not only do you need to our prior conversation, be concerned with the caller on the other end. Are they understanding? Are they tracking and following? Are they the right person to talk to? But you also need to do so in a way which is highly empathetic, which understands their needs and requirements. And it would seem to me that AI would automatically get in the way of that. That would be almost like a layer in between, like would turn you into a kind of robot answering these questions in a way that is factually accurate, but devoid of any understanding of the context of the conversation. If somebody calls in with a spouse that's passed away, needing to understand benefits, and you're treating them like they're doing an ATM withdrawal, that's not going to go well. You've thought this through, and I'd love you to share the way you think about how to actually have AI help with empathy.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question and a great framing of the problem statement, right, Anthony? Because, you know, until now, I'll be honest, my view of AI is exactly what you just described, which is like what we've seen in the Hollywood movies, right? It's like, or what we've experienced with chatbots. They don't have any empathy, to say the least. I mean, they just ask a question and you get the response.
Right. It's almost like you want to prioritize speed. Like, you give me a question, I'm going to give you that answer really fast.
Right. So that has been my view, but off late, it's changed quite a bit, actually, because we've seen now some good use cases on empathy. And I'll give you the classic example of where we've deployed it quite successfully. So we built, first of all, you know, in our ecosystem, we built a platform called TIA Gate. Originally, we started as Generative AI Technology Gate, and now we just use the same acronym, but we are now using it as Generative Agentic Intelligence Technology. And we put that in the hands of our colleagues through what we call MyGate. So every colleague, basically, we have the ambition to put MyGate in the hands of every colleague in the company. And we've been rolling it out to thousands of colleagues. by end of summer, we'll have at least 5,000 colleagues with MyGate in their hands. So now they can actually use it for like citizen innovation, essentially. So one of those innovations after we put MyGate in the hands of our colleagues in our complaints department was this empathy, which is very powerful. And just to set the context, we get, like every financial services institution or any institution, as a matter of fact, we get complaints and we get thousands of complaints. And the way we handle these complaints is a complaint comes in, it goes to the complaint. So the complaint could come in through our customer service division, or it could be coming through our online channels, through our mobile app. It could be as simple as somebody sending an email to me directly saying, I'm frustrated, I've done all these things, blah, blah, blah. So anything, or it could be in actual snail mail, which we do get, by the way, like actual handwritten letters as well. So everything is accepted. So a lot of research has to go to handle this complaint and then to address it. And we have obviously timelines, then we have regulatory windows. The minute you start a complaint, and we want to make sure that we handle this complaint and close it. So in the middle of all of that, the complaint handling team, their priority number one is to handle the complaint and do all the necessary homework and research and then with facts and then handle it properly. So it's hard to also be very empathetic in the middle of all of that when you have thousands of complaints and this small team has to handle all of that and all that stuff. So in a typical construct, we would have, as you said before, we would have thrown more people at the problem and then it would still not fully scale because of the volume of some of these and the complexity of it. So now we've put AI empathy agent for this team. And what it does is it's more like an assistant for our complaint handling team. For each person, essentially, you have a digital AI assistant. Let's call it the co-pilot, for the lack of a better word. And it's giving them recommendations on empathetic correspondences. Or if they have written, like if I'm the complaint handler and I'm sending you a correspondence, empathy agent is right there saying, Sastry, you may want to think about this this way, because considering the context of this participant's issue, this is not the right tone. How cool is that, right? I mean, like one way to think about it is really machines are now going to teach us empathy as humans. But the other way to think about it is they can assist us in the middle of complex processing to ensure that we don't lose the human side of us in our correspondences. I know it's counterintuitive, but I think it's a very, very impactful use case from an AI helping humans, assisting humans in, frankly, being better humans.
Yeah, I love it because what makes an agent more empathetic is being able to pull together an answer quickly and then having that check to say, what state is the person I'm talking to in? And maybe they're in a place where, yes, they're filing a complaint, but what they need is resolution quickly because there's a challenge, and what they just want is an answer. Or maybe what they want is just to be heard and to having their feedback sort of responded to in a way more carefully, more thoughtfully, is a way to help have them acknowledge that they've been heard. And in that sense, a system can really help guide an agent into providing that.
And just to add to that, and point, it also helps us in training. Right. So when we have like colleagues, we hire a lot of interns, we hire a lot of people that are like, from schools that are going through these programs, and we train them. So it almost brings a level of uniformity to the way we communicate as well, and frankly gives them more empowerment with time as they see this. So I think it's also a good training tool. Of course, we can use it in our training departments as well, but this real-time production set of use cases, right?
No, that's a great point. And again, a lot of this, I'm sure, comes through repetition and practice. And again, that can be really helpful. You've made this distinction between AI and, you mentioned a few times, agentic AI. I think this is maybe even an area where I struggle to clearly define the difference. And maybe in that spirit, if you don't mind, kind of casting your eye forward, where you see TIA investing, where do you see this going? Is everything moving to an agentic system? What is an agentic system and how would it differentiate from a traditional AI system? I'd love to get your view on where things are going.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of debate, as we know, like even like semantics matter a lot. There's like this religious debate on, is it AI agents or agentic AI, are they the same, are they different, what's the definition? And you open your LinkedIn, there's like articles and articles and articles from all these influencers. At the end of the day, I believe that if you take all this semantics and all the jargon out, there is a workforce of the future in the making right now. And how fast you will evolve into it, it depends on how fast this technology is evolving and the ecosystems are evolving, and frankly, how fast the companies are moving. That's kind of like almost the premise of the problem that we are in, or the opportunity we are in, whichever way you look at it. So workforce of the future, and the workforce of the future will have people and agentic AI. And people and machines will have to work together, collaborate, and we still have to figure out what that means and what it means to businesses, what it means to business models, what it means to customer service, what it means to growth opportunities. And I mean, if you step back and if you think about the last big technological revolution like this, go back to 2007 and Steve Jobs showing the iPhone and that moment. And we at that point knew a little bit about app stores and apps and all that and what it would mean and all that. But nobody at that moment predicted there would be this big gig economy. There would be this big sharing economy. There would be this, there would be that. And now here we are, like, moving hundreds of millions of dollars through mobile phone transactions, and then people are doing gigs. And I feel like it's too early to kind of predict because it's moving so fast. But with a workforce of the future in mind, I think there is businesses of the future that kind of come with it, with this power of workforce of the future. Because, and I, this is a classic example of comparison, right? You take a company of 100,000 people on one side that has been inventing or reinventing itself with AI. And then you take a company that has similar value proposition, but the composition of the company is 1,000 people and 10,000 agents. Well, then how do you actually compete in the market if both have similar set of products and capabilities, but one has the composition of agents that are working 24/7 essentially that don't have the same emotional power, but then you have people that are working their hours, but they bring a lot more emotional capital with them, but they don't have the scale of the technology agents that are running on the other side, right? So I think it's going to be very interesting, to be honest, you know, how this thing will evolve. So my first theme is workforce of the future. The second theme I would say is workflows of the future. So whatever the composition of the company will be for any company that will finalize itself with time, what they work on is going to be dramatically different. Like if I'm a marketing content manager, or if I'm a developer, or if I'm a legal analyst, or if I'm a research analyst in our equities market, my job as it's defined today and my job in like 3-5 years from now, they'll be dramatically different, right? So I think that's the other thing. Like, what we do today will be very different from what we will do in the future. So I think workflows of the future, I think is very important. And then of course, third is really, so what? So what does that really mean to these big companies? Yes, there will be startups, just like how we've seen in the internet and social media. And remember this Solomo, social mobile, local ecosystems that we're surfacing. I'm sure we'll see different set of ecosystems that are coming out. We're already seeing that with AI, the AI-powered economy, like agents doing the shopping. So if agents are talking to agents and then doing the shopping for you, then the whole emotional appeal of advertising goes away, right? Like we go to the website or app and we see this nice advertising for a jacket or a bag, and then we are like, oh yeah, that looks good. Maybe we should try it. But then if I have a shopping agent that does that for me, the shopping agent has no empathy towards that because it's AI. It's looking for value or brand or whatever the parameters are. And it's a very different thing. Or professional services are changing as we speak. Like ad agencies, the big piece on it. Consulting, there's a big piece on it. So I feel like workforce of the future, workflows of the future, business models of the future as a result are the three like big problems or opportunities that the world will be contemplating with. And it's great to be part of this mega revolution. You know, it's great to have a front seat, being part of a company of our stature and heritage to kind of shape it from within with our teams here.
I think that's a very useful framing, the workforce of the future, the workflows of the future, and then how that impacts the business model. And what I really appreciate is it's clear TIAA will be on the cutting edge of that. So look, really appreciate you making the time to join and sharing those insights. And thanks for joining us on Data Masters.
Thanks, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of the Data Masters podcast. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. And if you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode.